Legal Matters.
Legal Matters on 702, 15 minutes after 8 o'clock. Thanks very much for joining us. This is a very interesting one. Claire Thompson is in the studio one more time. I know she's your favorite because she calmly and with a great level of composure explains all these intricate legalese that we go through. And she is from Wits Incorporated, where she's the head of family law department. And she is obviously a specialist and family law practitioner. Claire, thanks for joining us again. Welcome.
It's lovely to be back with you again, Thabo.
Yeah. Lovely stuff. I'm interested to know, firstly, about the background of the story. For those who might have missed it, give us just a quick background, what happened, because these are the issues that we often come up against. All the time, we seem to think that when we go different ways, things will just be straightforward. It will be just black and white. I will get my 50% and she will get her 50% and we'll move on with our lives. But we wouldn't have lawyers if that was the case, would we?
Certainly not. An astute observation.
Yeah. No, in this instance, what are we dealing with this week?
So this week we're talking about forfeiture of benefits in divorce. And I think when we look at the judgment in question and the facts surrounding the reasons for the judgment that was granted by the Supreme Court of Appeal, it really speaks to the ongoing recognition of the sanctity of marriage, and that albeit that society is changing,
yes,
sometimes people don't want to get married.
Yeah.
Some people are living in domestic partnerships with one another.
Yes.
Some people say that marriage is no longer a relevant institution.
Yeah.
It seems like the courts are still very much prepared to hold tight and with reverence, mm-hmm, the institution of marriage. And I think that this is exactly what this judgment speaks to,
mm-hmm,
that if there is substantial misconduct, mm-hmm, amongst other factors, that a court will take that into consideration as to whether or not parties that would in the ordinary course of a divorce application share in the patrimonial benefits of that marriage. And when we speak about the patrimonial benefits, mm-hmm, we're talking about money.
Yeah.
And that's always a hot topic.
That's a thorny issue, right?
It is.
And it is the glue that keeps us together, whether we like it or not. It's difficult when money's not there and when it's there as well.
Mm.
So in this instance, we are looking at a divorce instance wherein there are two parties obviously involved, and one is not, the court is ruling against one individual. In this instance, is it the gentleman, the husband?
It's the husband that is found against in this matter.
Yeah.
Albeit that he was the plaintiff. He was the one who initiated the divorce action, and he sought divorce against his wife. And the divorce was in fact granted. But the challenge that came before the Supreme Court of Appeal was with regards to whether or not he had an entitlement to share in her pension benefits that she was to receive from the government employee pension funds because she was a teacher. And very often a pension interest constitutes quite a big amount of money, especially in matters like this where the parties were married since 1985.
Yeah.
It's a long duration of the marriage before this pension benefit was a question in their divorce. And so very often there's a substantial amount of money that has been accrued.
Yeah.
And it can form a part of the divorce proceedings, as we see in this matter, where albeit that when the divorce was granted, the court said that he was entitled to share 50% of her pension fund as a component of the joint estate because they were married in community of property, even though in the ordinary course, in an in community of property marriage, he would be entitled to share that.
Yeah.
As a result of the affair and adulterous relationship that he'd pursued for many years, the fact that he had denuded the community of property estate, and the allegation is that he ruined her financially to approximately the tune of 1.5 million rand.
Oh, my goodness.
These are the allegations that are made, and I can actually read, which
I think
is quite interesting.
Yes.
I think very often, you know, we're curious. The one party alleges one thing and the other party alleges the other thing. And as you correctly pointed out, this is the reason why lawyers are going to be in business for a long time, because we both we attorneys in this sort of instance, one acts for the husband, one acts for the wife. Mm-hmm. The one who acts for the husband takes his version and distills it into a written format, mm-hmm. and approaches the court with that that information. Mm-hmm. And then the wife's attorney is tasked with responding, yes. to those papers.
Yes.
And
yes.
what's interesting about this judgment in particular is that they've extracted the reasons for the breakdown of the marriage from the original pleadings, and I can read that for you.
We are all ears.
The husband in this case said the parties are no longer compatible and they don't share common interests with one another. And the wife, through her conduct, has humiliated him and hurt him. He's lost his love and affection for her and is no longer interested in the continuation of the marriage relationship. He denies... Sorry, the wife has denied the husband his conjugal rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the case that the husband brings to the court and says, please grant me the divorce on the basis of irretrievable breakdown.
Yeah.
And then let us share in this joint basket that I like to speak of week on week. I'm sure your listeners will have heard me speak about this joint basket. He says, I want half of this basket. Let us walk away with our half share of the basket and consider us divorced.
Yeah.
She, on the other hand, comes back and says, no, I'm not happy with this scenario. It's not me that caused the breakdown of the marriage.
Mm.
She says, it was he who formed an adulterous relationship, and he refused to end that adulterous relationship, even though she had asked him. He has a 5-year-old child with his mistress. He failed to contribute to the running of the home and the maintenance of the party's children. He was financially irresponsible. He would spend his money on his mistress. He ruined her financially to the tune of approximately 1.5 million rand. And he humiliated and degraded her throughout the marriage relationship. There is a total lack of communication between the parties, and that they are living separate lives and they are no longer interested in the continuation of a marriage relationship.
That is just too rich for words, Claire. And I was wondering to myself, how does a court come to a determination solely based on infidelity of one partner?
Mm.
And I was just wondering if the law in this instance is not skating on thin ice, on a thin line between law and morality, and to what extent is the court empowered to pronounce itself on moral issues that perhaps are not right, but not illegal. But in this instance, it appears as though there is more to it, because one can quantify the money that was spent, the wastage that took place, and everything else that the husband perhaps omitted to divulge to the court.
Mm, and I think when we look at this case, I think as a public, the things that make this story interesting are absolutely the affair. I think it reads a bit like a novel.
Yeah.
When you read the judgment, the court goes into detail about the evidence that is led on behalf of the wife by her legal team, insofar as the conversations that they had when she discovered that he was having an affair, that she confronted his mistress and she confirmed that the affair was being had.
Goodness me.
That she spoke to her husband about it and he denied it. But when they went into therapy, he said that he was going to continue with his affairs. And if a man doesn't continue have an affair, then he is a fool. And he makes allegations like this and then proceeds to pursue this relationship. He says he will not stop having affairs with third parties in the relationship. And she says to him, well, in that case, I'm not interested in an intimate relationship with you because of the health risks that are faced by me. And it's interesting that he then brings up this conjugal rights aspect when it comes to the divorce.
The rationality of this from the side of the court, is it mainly propelled by the fact that the wife did attempt to somehow salvage whatever was left of the marriage? It was the irrationality of the husband in this instance which actually led to the breakdown that he now claims and brings before the court.
So I think, interestingly, one of the points that is raised by the court is that it's not in and of itself the affair that is problematic and that leads to the forfeiture of the benefits of marriage.
Mm.
It is a cumulative or substantive look at all of the factors that go into the components of this substantial misconduct on the part of the husband.
Mm.
And they reference a case where, albeit that a wife has had an affair, even though she's financially contributed into the marriage and she's supported her husband for the duration of the marriage, doesn't necessarily qualify her, or her husband rather, doesn't qualify her husband in that case for a forfeiture of benefits just by virtue of the affair.
Okay.
It is accumulation of factors, misconduct on the part of the parties. And I see, and when you look at this further on from the affair is where this problem starts in this marriage. And then the husband doubles down, if I may say, when the wife dismisses the mistress from their family business. She says she's not prepared to have this woman work in the family business anymore, and she dismisses her. And as a result of that, he shifts his focus away from the family business and starts assisting his mistress to create businesses of her own that compete with the family business from that supports the family, that supports the children born of the marriage.
Taking resources from the family business and investing them in this now newly formed affair. Mm. And could it be that that was his share? And the court may just think you have spent your share of your pension through other nefarious activities. It is quite unfair for you to come back and still want more from where you were reaping.
So the court doesn't draw that particular analogy, but I think it's quite tempting to go there. You know, you've had your fair share of this particular pot. Do you really want any more?
Yeah.
But that's not the analysis that the court goes into.
What is the gist of the analysis?
So I think it's important to bear in mind that when a court is assessing whether or not to grant forfeiture of benefits in divorce, they need to look to the legislation.
Okay.
So you either look to legislation or you look to case law. And in this particular case, the Divorce Act, and particularly Section 9 of the Divorce Act, deals specifically with forfeiture of patrimonial benefits.
Yeah.
And it says that in order to qualify for this particular instance, which is that the wife was able to say that the husband should forfeit the benefits that he is entitled to, the courts need to consider several factors, one of which is the duration of the marriage. Now, the marriage could be a long marriage or it could be a short marriage.
Yes.
Typically, it's easy to access the idea of a short marriage where somebody has been married to somebody for a year or less, perhaps, and as a result of the way that they are married, that the other, that one person would stand to benefit from half of the estate of the other person.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if we are to look at the typical, forgive me, but the typical Hugh Hefner sort of
arrangement
where we have a very, very wealthy older person who's accumulated a substantial asset base in their life, and then we have a much younger person getting married to them, and within a very short period of time, a divorce action is then initiated.
Yeah.
And by virtue of a marriage in community of property, would that person who'd been married for a very short period of time then be entitled to share the entire estate of that person to whom they're married?
Yeah.
I think that's the easiest thing for us to hang our hats on. But interestingly, in this matter, it was not that case. It was, in fact, that the parties had been married for a very long period of time.
Ah.
Since 1985.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's not that the duration of the marriage is necessarily a short one in order to satisfy this criteria. Mm. It could be a long one, like it is in this particular instance.
Claire, what does it say moving forward to some of our listeners, perhaps who are tuned in right now, and who are unfortunately, and I pray not, but unfortunately find themselves in these difficult circumstances wherein one partner was involved in activities of infidelity to a large extent, and the finances of the family were compromised as a result. Does this set any legal precedents of any sorts that now you stand a chance to really claim infidelity and its financial consequences?
Absolutely, and I think this is part of our law. So this is not a new aspect of our law. But absolutely, this is a case that can be relied on by people who are faced with this particular circumstance. I think what's important to bear in mind is that the benefit of getting legal advice from an expert in a particular field is that you come with your version, you come with your story, and that person within their field of expertise assesses the factual matrix in which this divorce now lives, this potential divorce, and will then advise their clients on the prospects of success. And I think when we look at this particular set of facts and this particular instance that this woman found herself in, the consequence of this was that she was successful when she ultimately appealed. I will say, though, it took her initial divorce action, which the divorce was granted, but her husband was granted 50% of her pension fund in the court of first instance, so in the divorce court.
Yeah.
Then she appealed to a high to the full bench of the High Court.
Yeah.
She was still unsuccessful.
Oh, my goodness me.
And she took it as far as the Supreme Court of Appeal in order to get this particular judgment, which says that she is, in fact, the successful party. And so the law is not always cut and dry.
Yeah, yeah.
And the law requires this, and Aubrey often speaks about this, this engagement, that we need to engage with the law, that we need to test it, that we need to grapple with it and, you know, a bit of rough and tumble with it.
Yeah.
You know, we cannot just take it as a given that, you know, what the legislation says or what previous case law says necessarily, that that is the end of it and open and shut. And in this particular case, she went as far as the Supreme Court of Appeal in order to get the judgment that she got, which said that her husband's behavior was of such serious nature that it was irreconcilable with the share that he would ordinarily have been entitled to.
011-883-0702. It's 28 minutes to 9 o'clock. You're on 702. My name is Thabo Sholemashao. I'm standing in for Aubrey. And we are speaking to Claire Thompson, who is with Wits Incorporated, where she is the head of family law department. And the discussion this evening is around a case, a divorce case, whereby a wife was taken to court for a divorce. The husband was looking forward to divorce the wife for various reasons. Later on, it emerged that the husband was actually cheating on the wife for quite some time, unfaithful, and there were various activities of infidelity on the side of the husband, so much that the family finances were used by their husband to finance the mistress and assist her to set up business that would then in turn compete with their initial family business. The wife tried by all means to tell the husband to stop. He wouldn't. They went to counseling and he still wouldn't budge at all. Later on, after a couple of engagements, it was found that the court found that the husband was not entitled to the pension of the wife. Is that the gist of it?
Claire? Yes, absolutely.
Now, I would love to ask you, you are listening to us right now, and I pray, as I said before, that you're not going through this ordeal. It's not comfortable. Divorce is messy. It affects children, families, everyone else. It affects work, and I don't wish it upon anyone else. But if you are in this situation, what sort of help are you getting? Would you like to share with us? Perhaps you had a different case that had to deal with infidelity one way or the other. Or you've got a question to ask. Perhaps you are contemplating. Hopefully not. But if you are maybe contemplating leaving your husband, your wife because of infidelity, and you've got a question to ask regarding the finances, because those will be material post the life of your marriage one way or the other, feel free to give us a call. Ask any question related to the story, and that's why Claire is here. If you do not get her here, she will charge a top dollar. Rather, make use of the opportunity right now, because even if she gives us her contact details after this session to speak to her, you will pay handsomely. Rather, make use of her while she's still here. If you've got any question related to infidelity, divorce, who gets what, and are you in the right, are you in the wrong, case law, you are at liberty to discuss that with us right now. 011-883-0702. 011-883-0702. Alternatively, you can send us a WhatsApp message or a voice note. If you're a little bit shy to speak on the phone, send us a voice note to 072-702-1702. 072-702-1702. This is extremely serious, and I don't necessarily want to exaggerate the importance of this or seem too sentimental about this matter. But we do know of late that infidelity is rife. It is all over the place. Some people are even proud of it, so much that they mention that they are not going to leave their side partners, so to put it. What are the implications truly? And this case opens our eyes to serious implications. And you could be pondering. It could be that you've been pondering on this. And this just may be the only issue that has kept you in your marriage or that has stopped you from taking a step out. I'm not encouraging you to leave, by the way. We're just discussing the law. And I want that to be clear. But if that's the case, feel free to give us a shout. This is an opportunity. Let's talk openly about this. 011-883-0702. This is Anonymous from the Val. Hi, Anonymous.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. I hope your name is not Magdalene. I will call so that I can call you Magdalene, so that we don't say Anonymous.
No.
No, can we call you Magdalene for purposes of that?
No, that's fine.
Okay, great.
I got divorced 9 years ago, and we were married in community of property. We divorced due to infidelity with numerous different women. However, when I went to court, he did not show up, so they said we must split everything 50-50. Then he decided to resign, and he took his pension, and he literally, everything was taken through to the liquidator. I think it's the liquidator, if I'm correct. And till today, the estate is still not sorted out. He keeps dodging and diving, never got the pension, never got anything. My question now, first, I would like to get advice on a way forward. And then second thing is, can I go back to court to go and fight the division? Because a lot of division was not sorted out. As much as it's 9 years down the line, I'm still sitting with a house that has my name on it.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't pay, I get affected.
Yeah.
I asked him, bring the papers. I will sign them without, because the bank, they said they need both of our signatures, every time I need to get something, I have to always submit a divorce decree. And it's such a nightmare, because it constantly keeps coming up, this divorce that was never sorted out. It keeps up.
Let's do this, Magdalene. I'm going to ask Claire to respond to some of the concerns that you've raised. Stay on the line in case there's one or two follow-up questions, and then we'll say goodbye after that. Please hang tight. Mm-hmm. Claire?
I feel terribly for your caller. I will say, and this is not an uncommon story, sadly. So often, I think, especially with people who run their own divorce, if I can say, and there's no slight here either, I will say, if it is that parties elect to go to the regional court, the regional magistrate's court, and run their divorce themselves without the assistance of an attorney, they can do that. That's the reason why the court is set up. You don't need to spend money on a lawyer if your matter is appropriately heard in the magistrate's court, and you have the confidence and you have enough say and bargaining power, I suppose, in order to be able to go ahead with that. But I think often what we see is that years have passed by, the divorce decree was granted, and yet the proprietary aspects that are very often simply stated in the divorce decree that says division of the joint estate, and maybe about the appointment of a liquidator, as your listener has referred to, which is which is absolutely correct and absolutely expected in this type of divorce. And what I will say is that I will encourage everybody to act sooner rather than later. Time is of the essence. And I understand that immediately post-divorce, there is absolutely a temptation to say, I am just done, you know.
Yeah.
I am over this marriage. I'm emotionally at the end of my line. I have nothing more to give. And the last thing that I now want to do is now try and sort out the house, the pension fund, the bank accounts, and so on. But my advice generally to people, and specifically to your caller now, is that the quicker we act, the better. Because whilst there is still that impetus around the divorce, then it's easier to get things going.
Yeah.
If a pension fund has been withdrawn and spent, and this person is a person of straw, like we like to refer to them in the law, it means that they have nothing. He's frittered away all of his money on goods or failed business opportunities or whatever the case may be, gambling perhaps, you know, I'm talking very worst case scenarios here. But if the money is gone, then the money is gone. We can't draw blood from stone. And so the sooner that we act, the better. If it is that there is an immovable property that is still registered in both people's names and that there is a need to get the property out of one person's name into the other and that the court order or settlement agreement doesn't cater for that, we can either deal with it by virtue of variation, or you need to approach the court in order to get the court to assist. But again, it's very often the last thing that people feel like doing after a divorce because it feels like, oh, we've just got to do another thing. And I thought that once the divorce, you know, the ink was signed and the stamp was made on that piece of paper, that I would be able to move on with my life. Until all of these little parcels have been wrapped up, children, financial assets, all of that, until that's all been wrapped up, then the divorce is not finalized.
Two questions very quickly relating to the pension fund, and where in one partner might have decided to be dubious and go and withdraw it quickly or do whatever it is that they do and run away with it and spend it wisely or otherwise. So one, I heard you saying, let's not draw blood from the stone. What chances do you have in holding the pension fund itself accountable, given that they might have known about the divorce, they might have received the letter, yet they nonetheless released the funds to this person who decided to be dubious in the divorce instance?
So I think if it is that the divorce, the pension fund or the provident fund or the financial institution has been notified and given notice of the divorce, who have been given a copy of the divorce order, and they've acted contrary to the instructions in the divorce order, I certainly think that there would be a claim that would be possible against the particular fund in question. The problem very often is, unfortunately, is that the pension fund does not know. And they are not advised that there is a divorce pending. And so the fund is withdrawn upon resignation. And they are, you know, the law has changed somewhat over the years. And whereas you could withdraw 100% without reinvesting it, the picture is a little bit different now. But in the event where 100% of that pension fund has been withdrawn and it has been paid to the member spouse, even if it's the now ex-spouse member, and the pension fund was not made aware of the pending divorce proceedings or the final divorce proceedings, they could not reasonably have been expected to have known this.
And I hear that and I accept that very well. But where they were told very clearly and there was paper trail emails to the effect prior to the date wherein they paid out. And and I'm raising this because people are always thinking that when it's government that is involved, we are too harsh on them. But come private companies, we just put on the kids' gloves and deal with them lightly. So I just want to know, do you have actionable cause? Can you have actionable cause against a financial institution that nonetheless paid out even though you had submitted relevant paperwork?
I absolutely think that you could consider holding them accountable if they acted negligently.
Sure.
And I've had, you know, I've had both positive and negative experience with government pension funds.
Yes.
I will say the GEPF, they are sometimes very, very efficient and they are sometimes less efficient.
Yeah.
Private, because of the reporting to the ombud and you know the shareholders and the directors and the interests and the social media and the way that we hold corporates accountable these days tend to be a little bit easier to deal with, but I think that I think certainly one would have a claim against the fund in question if they acted contrary, especially if they acted contrary to a divorce order.
Last question, then we go back to Magdalene. If this person withdrew the money and now they have a property, immovable property and some assets, can you claim against them even though the money went missing at the fund itself?
So if it is that there is a claim against the person,
yeah,
if we forget the fund for a moment say that the fund did whatever they were supposed to do or they weren't aware, but this person now has assets in their name like a house or a car, you can claim enforcement of that judgment as you would any judgment. Yeah. It's a judgment where money is involved. You can claim from somebody just like you would in the event of a motor vehicle accident, for example. And it would require attachment of the particular asset by the sheriff and a sale and so on. And this is why it's important to act quickly.
Sure. Listen, Magdalene, I'm giving you one more question or rebuttal if you have, or a last concern. Then I'll go to Malerato and Peter in Walkerville. Lastly, Magdalene?
No, I do get what you guys are saying, but I think my other major concern that as much as he withdrew it, he's doing well now, and that's not my issue. My issue is 9 years ago, you withdrew things that you were supposed to have sorted out, and the house now as well. How do I get the house to remove my name from the house? Because there were certain things, because the liquidator is not doing anything. He took a lot of money from both parties and nothing. And then my last question is, how do I get the liquidator to take responsibility? Because I think he took over 300 and something thousand from just me alone.
Okay. You know. Magdalene, please listen on the radio. Thank you so much, Claire.
I would suggest going back to court. Ordinarily, when we talk about debt, you have 3 years in which to claim that debt back. You know, if I was to borrow money from you and I wasn't to pay you back, you have 3 years in which to claim that money back from me, except if you get a judgment.
Yes.
And that judgment debt lasts for 20 years. And so in the case of a divorce, you have the judgment behind your name. And so I would go back to court if I was your listener, and I would ask the court to assist. Alternatively, if it is that you have an appetite to consult with an attorney, I would do so, because you need to take more steps in order to enforce this judgment, because there's a gap now between what has been done and what still needs to be done. And if the liquidator is not doing what they're supposed to be doing, the court needs to enforce the role that the liquidator fills in this particular divorce action.
Sure. Let's go to Malerato in Boksburg. Hi there, Malerato.
Hi.
Welcome.
Yes, I have a question for Claire.
Sure.
I'm calling actually on behalf of my daughter. She was married in 2014, and then years down the line, she realized that the husband is actually homosexual. And then he started off by not coming back home, coming back the following morning, and then he started being physical, that now he started hitting her. So my daughter had no choice but to leave the house and then find an alternative place. Now they are going through the divorce. They had a house in which they were not living. They moved to another place. They rented that house that they bought together. Now, what I want to know is, in the case like this, the husband is homosexual, and then he didn't disclose, you know. He was hiding, he was having the affair with this other man. Now, after my daughter left him, he only then told my daughter that he has always been homosexual. But, he regrets why he actually got married to her. Now they have to go through divorce. They made arrangements, okay, because they have two children.
Yeah.
They said, okay, this house is neither mine nor yours. The house belongs to the children. But now, in the process, the husband has accrued a debt of about 150,000 rand. He used to work in a spaza shop. He had his own business making food, fast food. Now, he wants my daughter to pay that 150,000 before he can sign for the divorce settlement.
Okay. And you just want to know what the law says on that.
I know what route to take now in this case, because he got into a marriage knowing that he's homosexual. And then now he wants to be, not to call it now, like he is the victim in this whole thing.
I see. Ne Malerato, I'm going to ask you to hold for 1 second. Ne, allow Claire to respond to it. Then let's see if there are any follow-ups that would result from there. Claire?
It's an interesting case, and I can hear, you know, how much pain that this has caused this particular family. And I think, you know, the reasons for the breakdown of the marriage in this case are, you know, are tragic, really, in that, you know, people who identify a particular way are now able to give expression, but that there is somebody that is hurt, and that there is a marriage that is now coming to an end as a result of that. I think if we are to look at the legislation, the question is there a benefit that accrues to this marriage that is due to be forfeited? Mm. And I think if we are to look at the facts around the circumstances again, you know, we have to look at, is there misconduct in this marriage? Has the misconduct been so egregious that the natural next consequence of the court's order is... you know, that there should be a forfeiture. And then in addition to that, the question is there an undue benefit that is afforded to one person and not the other? And I'm not sure in this particular case whether payment of a debt would constitute a benefit or not. And I think it's an interesting question, and I think it's possibly one that would need to be explored a little bit further. Mm. Because I think when we commonly think about benefit, we think about what it is that you are getting. There is a pension fund, there is a house, there is a car, there is an investment. You know, I think we very often consider that to be part of the benefits of marriage, that you are receiving something. I think it's a very interesting question whether the absolution of part of a responsibility to debt is in fact would be considered a response a benefit of marriage or not, and I must be honest, I don't have the immediate answer for you, but it's an interesting one as we are talking through,
because it's very complex, and I'm just thinking with time, perhaps consultation, a lot may be unraveled, and proper counsel may result from that.
It's a very interesting question, though.
Mem Adlerato, we will be giving out Claire's numbers towards the end of the show. I'm going to urge you to stay tuned and perhaps grab the contact details, or if you've got your own attorney, go back, ventilate it with them, and let's see what comes out of there. Thank you so much for your call, Mama. I really appreciate it. And Chris, I have somehow managed to mess up the screen. I don't know why, but here we are. We've got it back. Voila. Peter in Walkerville. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
I'm free. How are you, Peter?
Good, hello.
Yes.
I'm having this challenge. Mm. In 2007, I met a lady who, I got married to a lady who told me that she has lived with a man for 13 years. She has a child of 12 years, and she's having this challenge that she cannot live with me without getting married to her. I got married to her, and because this man was a foreigner, she was always having other affairs beside that one. She promised me that she had a chance to have other men. And in 2009, she said she's going to her homeland in Limpopo. During that time, when she starts to go to Limpopo, I called her family in Limpopo, discovered that she's not there. And instead of coming back, she was scared to come back. You know, I phoned her. The phone was off until I asked her that, no, can I pick her? She refused me to take her to Limpopo this time. And only to find out that she was with another man. Mm-hmm. And it was during the Easter holidays. And I'm trying to make the story short.
Yeah, I was going to urge you to, because we're running out of time, and I'd like to give Claire a chance to respond. Yes. So if you will, maybe just give us a gist.
Okay, what happened was, since that time she deserted. She never came back from that trip, and she lived with another man. And then in 2011, I tried to file for a divorce. Then when I was trying to file for a divorce, I couldn't get hold of her. I didn't know her address. She was in Sabwenzoweto. I tried to trace her address. I couldn't. Then I end up working in Bloemfontein. I couldn't have a chance to see her again.
Today, where and are now, you?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm saying today, you'd like to find out, are you divorced today with her?
No, we are not yet divorced.
Yeah. So you'd like to find out how to...
How to proceed with this matter, because I could get hold of her. I've got, she found me having a house. Anyway, she was never registered in that house because of that house which we should jointly have. We never shared any property together, but we were married in community of property.
Yeah.
Even though now she's trying to phone me and ask me to come, and she wants to come back because she's having another, she's having three children with that man now. And by then, we
don't
have.
Oh my goodness. Oh, we should write a novel about this. This is wow. Peter, I'm going to ask you to hold 1 second. Claire, do you have any follow-up questions that you'd like to raise with Peter?
No, but I think it's probably a question that many people will find interesting if they have physically separated from their spouse and they are now living in different provinces or different areas, and they are now no longer able to serve the divorce summons on them because they don't know where they are.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we can appoint a tracer, but if it is that we have a last known address and we send the sheriff to try and serve this divorce summons, and the sheriff comes back and they say this person doesn't live there anymore, and we try and we figure out how where they are, and you know, maybe we send a WhatsApp and maybe we make a phone call or send an email or something like that and try and find out where this person is, and we cannot succeed. If after you've tried to make reasonable attempts to try and find this person, you can go back to court and tell the court about this and say, is there an alternative way that I can achieve service other than with the sheriff because I don't know where this person lives? And the court won't hold you in this marriage just by virtue of the fact that you can't find them. The court will allow you an alternative means to serve the summons, and it might be things these days like Facebook.
Yes.
Instagram.
Inbox.
WhatsApp.
DM.
DM. Totally different type of
quite amazing.
Yeah. And I think it's important, and it's really, really useful in this information age that we are in, that one need not stay in an unhappy marriage or a totally disconnected marriage in this particular case, I think, just by virtue of the fact that you can't find the person.
Sure. Peter, did you get that? Peter?
Hello?
Yeah, did you get that?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Yeah. So I think that sorts out a whole lot of your problems, right?
Okay.
I hope so.
All the best. All the best, Peter. This is Peter in Walkerville. Very interesting. Claire, as we say goodbye, please give us your contact details. But at the end of it all, it does not necessarily mean that if infidelity was part of a factor in the dissolution of a marriage, that you will be in the right.
No, it's accumulation
of factors.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's not... it's not one thing.
Yeah.
And it might not be a once-off affair.
Yeah.
It might not be a long-term affair.
Yeah.
The question is, who unduly benefits? Who has committed misconduct? Is everybody guilty of misconduct, or is one party guilty of misconduct? And I think when we look at all of the factors, and I think this is what... I mean, this is, I will say, one of the great privileges of my job is that I get to hear people's stories.
Yeah.
And everybody's story is a little bit different.
Yeah.
And so what we learn from this case, we might find similarities in other people's versions and stories, but very seldom will this exact case come. I'm prepared to hazard a guess that never again will this particular set of facts come before the court.
Just the way they are.
Everybody's case is different. Everybody's story is
different. The variables are different.
Yeah, and so if it is that you think that you might qualify for this, you might. You might just need legal expertise to guide you.
And speaking of which, contact details, how do we get hold of you?
On 011-010-0400 or via our website www.witsinc.co.za.
Claire Thompson, really appreciate it. Always fantastic chatting to you. She is with Wits Incorporated.